You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
I'm Rachel Stroud Goodrich, Associate Director of America's Refined Products here at Opus. And today we're going to be taking a look at hurricanes and their impacts on energy pricing. Now, we know these weather events are devastating and they have a high toll. Our hearts go out to anyone who's been impacted by recent storms. They can also, though, have a hefty impact on energy pricing. So that is what we're going to be looking at today. And joining me today for this discussion is Tom Closa, Opus's Global Head of Energy Analysis. Tom, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm among the founders of Opus, and I've been covering oil basically for about 49 years, including numerous hurricanes. And I actually survived a Category 5 at my home in Fort Myers in 2022. So I'm hoping against hope that we don't have hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico, but I also recognize that there are some circumstances that come with probability cones in the region.
Yeah, certainly do. And that Category 5 must have been a difficult one to get through. So let's start today with just some background. So Tom, can you tell us a little bit about when hurricane season typically occurs in North America, and what sort of times are we looking at here?
Sure. This year, we've already had a major hurricane, the first one to ever form and reach Category 5 status in July. Actually, it formed in June. The peak season is really August and September, and probably the most critical time for a hurricane in terms of energy prices and gasoline prices in particular is August. So we're on the threshold of really entering a critical 30 to 60 days of watching the water and watching the winds and the spiraling, because we could have a really dramatic impact on not just the United States, but the entire world because of some of the things that have changed in the oil business in the last 18 years.
So as we move into August, that's really when we are looking for these hurricanes coming and seeing their impacts as they hit. Now, you talked about looking for this as somebody is keeping an eye on the weather news and possibly looking at the impacts to their supply. We hear a lot of different climate terms thrown around, like El Nino versus La Nina and seawater temperatures. What are you keeping an eye on in terms of that this year?
Keeping an eye really on the West African dust storms. For now, that's mitigated the season and made it a little bit calmer than we thought it would be after Beryl made its way ashore. So it looks as though we're clear of July without a real storm threat in July. But the water temperatures are just so warm, and they've been that way for a while, that it's a very, very fertile development atmosphere for hurricanes. And I would point out that every hurricane that makes landfall in the United States destroys demand. It destroys consumption, particularly of gasoline, when you've got some regions ravaged. But it's the rare hurricane that destroys supply. But when they do, it can really have a dramatic impact. You know, the biggest case is Katrina in 2005. But the entire U.S. industry has changed so much since Katrina came ashore in August of 2005. That it really bears some description there. And what I mean is that the United States never exported crude oil from the 70s until 2014. Now we're kind of the supermarket of crude oil to the world, and we're also providing a lot of refined products, particularly to Latin America, but really probably 50 different countries. So one might suggest that whereas the Strait of Hormuz is recognized as the most critical choke point in the world for oil and for refined products prices, the U.S. Gulf of Mexico is number two. There are many, many days where we export a combined amount of hydrocarbons of about 12 million barrels a day.
So let's dig into that a little bit further and kind of the details. So, you know, if we're looking at preparations ahead of the storms and how the refineries are dealing with this, how the drilling folks are dealing with this, I mean, what are these producers contending with, and how are they affected specifically by the hurricanes, which then affect the supply?
Well, you have about 2 million barrels a day of offshore crude oil production. Most of it is off of Louisiana and Texas, but there's some other stuff scattered in the Gulf of Mexico. Mexico also has perhaps a million barrels a day or more of production in the Bay of Campeche, which was part of the path of Hurricane Beryl. So there's a lot of crude oil there, but the biggest difference and the biggest impact in crude oil can come in exports. I mean, we're routinely exporting about 4 or 5 million barrels a day of crude oil to the rest of the world. And I would suggest that if not for U.S. exports of crude oil, we'd probably be looking at $100 plus prices in the rest of the world. We mitigated that when we began to sell a lot of SPR crude in 2022, and it's continued to sort of suppress the price of crude oil in 2023 and 2024 because of the robust amount of exports. We're also exporting about 1.25 to 1.4 million barrels a day of diesel, much of which goes to South America or Latin America. If you watched Hurricane Beryl, when it kind of barreled through the Caribbean, by the way, it went over a lot of different territory that used to have refining in the Caribbean, places like Trinidad, Curacao, Aruba. And that's a major difference, too, from, let's say, 2005 when Katrina came ashore. We don't have that South American or that Latin American refined products capacity. So the entire hemisphere is much more dependent on the U.S. Gulf of Mexico. And by the way, if you look at all of the different crude oil projects and refining projects that have occurred in the last 15 years, all of the additional refined products capacity has been along the Texas and the Louisiana coast. So that's good for exports and that's good for U.S. supply, but it means we're much more vulnerable if we got a storm that hit, let's say, between Corpus Christi, Texas and Pascagoula, Mississippi.
And as you mentioned that, I'm thinking too, not only, you know, as you said, with some of the refineries that may have closed in the Caribbean and that sort of area, but also, you know, even PADD 1, even the U.S. East Coast, I think that we've seen a lot of changes there as well. And that kind of leads me to think about the transportation infrastructure. I mean, do we see, you talked about the impact on production, but when you're talking about something in the Gulf of Mexico or something that could potentially, hopefully not, but, you know, impact a pipeline, you know, what sort of issues do you see on the transportation infrastructure side after one of these storms comes?
Well, it, usually one of the first things that comes after a storm makes an impact in what I would call refinery row is you will get some regulatory relief, particularly with the Jones Act. You know, when Superstorm Sandy hit the Northeast back in 2011 or 12, there were some waivers that granted companies the ability to move oil, gasoline, diesel fuel, and tankers from the Gulf Coast to New York. Ordinarily, you can't do that. You've got to use American flag vessels, and the transportation costs can be 15 or 20 cents a gallon. So that's kind of one thing that the regulators have in their pocket in terms of a lever that they can pull, you know, should there be a storm really impact things. Beyond that, you have to recognize that in 2005, when Katrina had its great impact, we had probably about 1.4 million barrels a day of refining capacity in the Northeast, most of which was in the U.S., but there was a substantial portion in the Canadian Maritimes. Everything in the Canadian Maritimes but the Irving refinery, about 320,000 barrels a day, is gone. And not only that, this hurricane season, it looks as though we're going to be performing some maintenance in the Northeast on the Irving refinery and the refinery that Delta Airlines operates in Trainer, Pennsylvania. So it makes that region, you know, much more vulnerable to storm impacts. And Gulf Coast refiners supply an awful lot of the gasoline that's sold in the Northeast, or really all over the East Coast. So if there's an interruption of that, if they can't basically jam the Colonial Pipeline shut, it can have very, very dramatic implications for prices in New York Harbor. Obviously, a hurricane would be very disruptive to prices at the Gulf Coast, which harbors the biggest gasoline market, biggest bulk gasoline market in the world. But we have to recognize that it can really impact the Northeast because we're so dependent on gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel from Texas and Louisiana refineries.
So that brings up a really interesting point, because when you talk about New York Harbor, I mean, that's going to be the delivery point for the NYMEX RBOB, which is gasoline, and ULSD, diesel futures. That's where they get delivered. So can we pivot a little bit and talk about how futures pricing can get impacted by these storms coming in?
Sure. You know, last year we saw some storm chasing, and that's really just a term for some speculative buying in some contracts, particularly the RBOB futures contract that occurred last year. This year it's been, somewhat different and kind of unique. We're really not getting many companies chasing gasoline futures on the premise that there could be an interruption of supply. What we have seen, though, is we've seen a large influx of speculative money into WTI crude. And that has sent, you know, the amount of speculative money versus, let's say, what folks are shorting the market by about 13 to 1, which is very, very unusual. Anyone that's really looking to sort of safeguard against the impact of a hurricane, there's a few different strategies you can employ. The biggest strategy, other than just outright going along a futures contract or an options contract, is to buy front-to-back spreads. During hurricanes, it's not unusual for the front month to surpass the second month in futures prices by 40, 50, 60 cents a gallon. And the savvy traders who know about this, you know, they'll occasionally take some trades where they'll buy, let's say, September RBOB futures and sell October, betting that that relationship, you know, which currently is about 20 cents favor in the front month, that it could widen to 40 cents or 50 cents or even more. So those are some of the ways of doing it. The interesting thing so far this year is we're not really seeing it manifested in the futures market. The only contract in energy commodities that's seen an influx of speculative money this summer has been the WTI contract. And I've got to tell you, that's strange. It's odd to see folks speculating and taking long positions in WTI and not doing the same in Brent. And that could have some interesting ramifications. It's almost as though there's a suggestion that we're going to have an interruption in that 4 or 5 million barrel a day flow of crude oil exports to the rest of the world.
That's really interesting. Any idea of what might be causing that or behind that, that they're not reacting as the same in past years? Or is that more of something we have to wait and see what's happening with that?
You know, I think we need to wait and see. It's not necessarily, it's big money, but it's not necessarily smart money. And, you know, one of the old saws in business is that if you chase hurricanes and you buy on the premise that there's going to be an extensive outage, you're probably going to get hammered very, very quickly. You know, one of the reasons why we're much more susceptible to hurricane impacts in August than we are in September are that demand for gasoline tends to drop by about 400,000 or 500,000 barrels a day right after Labor Day. not only that, but probably in about 3 weeks, somewhere in the second half of August, refiners change their recipe for gasoline at the Gulf Coast, and they begin making autumn gasoline, which can have a lot cheaper components in it, like butane and some natural gasoline and naphtha. So there's things that work to the customer's advantages in terms of sending prices lower in, let's say, the last 100 days that aren't necessarily going to work to our advantage in the next 60 days.
So that's essentially saying that because we have that lower RVP, the lower reed vapor pressure gasoline coming in for the fall, and we know that that tends to be cheaper to make, supply issues that might come across after a hurricane, they're not going to be as bad once we get into that transitional period where we're starting to go toward fall gasoline. So it's really that, again, as you said, it's that August month that we're going to see maybe the biggest price impacts. They could be short-lived. And I think that, you know, getting back to regulatory relief, did you say that that's also some sort of tool there in terms of RVP? Is that something that can be used as well in hurricane relief?
I think everyone needs to recognize that August is much more critical than September or October in terms of hurricane impacts. In August, you have to use a very low vapor pressure gasoline because of the problem with summer ozone, and it's a much more difficult gasoline to make. This White House, people can criticize them for a lot of different things, but they're laser focused on gasoline. They have a task force. And I would submit that probably if the problem with the hurricane came late enough in August, they might relax some of the specifications and allow for the sale of autumn gas as opposed to summer gas a bit early. They've certainly exercised those sort of waivers in the past. Once we get into September, the formula for gasoline changes. Demand drops from about 9.3 million barrels a day to about 8.8 million barrels a day. And generally, there are a lot of pressures that are brought to bear on gas prices to send them lower. It's one of the reasons why you have this old saw, you know, and it's kind of heresy that, oh, gasoline prices always drop in front of the election. Well, they do. You know, just as the amount of daylight drops and the driving drops and the gasoline formula changes. So it's not a vast conspiracy. It's just typically that the last 100 days of any year are always going to see pressure on gas prices.
Yeah, just sort of a seasonal effect of it being that time of year sort of thing. So we talked a little bit, you know, about the futures prices, but I do want to just get an idea from you in terms of physical gasoline prices and what you do see when there are hurricanes. And I guess there's no one way it could go, right? Like we could see power interrupted. I think that was one of the big issues with Beryl. We could see, you know, the storm surge. We could see high winds. Depends where things land. But, you know, if we're talking about something coming into, say, the Gulf of Mexico region where the refineries are, I know you said it won't last long, but like what typically do we see? Are we seeing the diffs, the prices that physical product are trading compared to futures? Are those going high? Like what sort of impacts do you typically see?
Well, let me set the stage. This year, we're seeing gasoline fetch very, very modest profit margins versus crude. That's dramatically different from last summer and dramatically different from the 2022 summer. You know, in terms of how much gasoline fetches in terms of a profit over crude oil, it's probably only around $10 or $12 a barrel now as compared to $20 to $35. So we've got that kind of working in our favor for the moment, that gasoline profits are pretty nominal and they tend to drop as we get into the fall. The problem with that is that that means that you could get a pretty big run-up without really having that many dramatic consequences. And to a certain extent, a lot of refiners can hope that our hurricane might impede production. You know, let's say Corpus Christi, if they've got operations in the Texas Triangle or in New Orleans or whatever. So we're not seeing gasoline fetch a very strong premium to crude oil at the moment. But that could change, certainly with a hurricane impact. I would mention that a Category 1 hurricane doesn't really have that much impact. And through history, it's very rare to see one that results in a lot of shutdowns. Category 2, kind of on the fence there. But once you get into Category 3, 4, or God forbid, 5, that's where you can really have an impact on prices. In 2008, you know, we saw Gulf Coast gasoline prices trade at $1 to $2 over the futures market. And the futures market moved up pretty substantially as well. So, you know, one might say that there's plenty of kindling and oxygen for a real surge here, but hopefully we won't get storm impact.
Yeah, hopefully not. And so that brings to mind, I know you have some unique views on the potential price spikes tied specifically to hurricane categories and what you might anticipate with the different levels. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. It's more of a flight of fancy than a real calculus equation or whatever. But and we saw this with Beryl. Beryl was a Category 1 when it came ashore in Texas and didn't really have much of an impact on gasoline prices or crude oil prices. It was withstood the damage or the potential damage from it. And most of the refineries actually kept operating while the hurricane came ashore. I think that when you get other category numbers, my rule of thumb is you take the category of the storm and you cube it, and that's a likely impact on prices. So if you had a Category 3 storm come ashore in New Orleans, it might be 3 times 3 times 3, which is 27 cents down. God forbid if it was a Category 4, you might be talking about a spike in gas prices of 64 cents a gallon. But generally, with Category 1, you know, 20 years of hurricane impacts have basically helped refiners prepare for storm surge and wind damage. They do have to shut down if you're talking about 100 mile an hour wind and storm surge, but they can restore those operations in about a week.
That's terrific to know. So that kind of gives us a general rule of thumb that we can anticipate and have some sort of idea of what we might look for. Now, one thing I did want to touch on, we talked, a lot about the U.S., a bit about Canada, but what do you see? What might happen for Latin American, Caribbean, South American countries? How might they be impacted from the storms?
Well, that's the real dramatic difference between now and 2005 with Katrina. Back then, there was actually more Latin American refined products output, not counting South America or Caribbean. There's virtually nothing in the Caribbean now, and there were substantial refining operations back then. The population has grown there, but the actual refining capacity, and a lot of this is due to the failures of PDVSA and Venezuela to basically operate their refining system. You know, in the United States, we operate at 95, 98% of capacity. Venezuelan refineries might operate sometimes at between 15 and 25% of capacity. Mexico is pretty low in the 30 or 35% range. So the United States has an advantage because we've got cheap crude, we have cheap natural gas, cheap hydrogen, which is used to remove sulfur throughout a refinery. And so it's really the privileged continent in terms of an atmosphere for refineries. That said, we're probably providing over 1 million barrels a day of diesel and well over 500,000 barrels a day of gasoline to Latin America. And if that were cut off because of hurricanes, that would have some real dramatic impacts on that region. The Southern Hemisphere would be in quite substantial trouble.
It's good to know. So something to keep an eye on, and just how those product flows and changes in production have really impacted things over the years. I think we've had a good glimpse of that.
Yeah. One other thing to keep in mind for that too, are the politics of it. If you had a hurricane knocked out, let's say the Three Corpus refineries or Baytown and Beaumont, you might find some people in the regulatory environment or some people in Congress that go, hey, how come we're sending 800,000 barrels a day of gasoline to foreign countries and 1.25 million of diesel? Why aren't we keeping it here? And you know, obviously it's a nuanced and more sophisticated answer where, you know, these refineries exist only because of that valve of moving exports. But I worry about, you know, the reaction where there might be some movement afoot to sort of suppress gasoline or distillate exports if you did have a major storm impact like Harvey, Katrina, or even Aya back in 2021.
So, Tom, as we expand regionally, where else, what other impacts should we be looking at beyond? We talked about the Gulf Coast and the Northeast and now Latin America, but what else should we be looking at here?
All right. Well, I think the Gulf Coast and the East Coast are the primary regions you have to worry about, although I would suggest that Latin America is much more important than those in terms of potential for a really strange impact. If the Midwest gets a considerable amount of gasoline and diesel from Gulf Coast refineries and move up the Explorer pipeline or some other pipelines, and one of the problems is we will have a refinery closing within the next 9 months or so. The Houston Lionel refinery that runs about 280,000 barrels a day. That facility is going to be retired before the first quarter of 2025 is over. You know, currently we're suffering with a real problem at a Chicago refinery that got kind of knocked out of whack when it was nearly hit by a tornado probably about 10 days ago. So that's a loss of about 240,000 barrels a day in the region. Generally, refiners who operate in the Midwest, and I wouldn't suggest this is Schadenfreude, but it's just sort of practical, they benefit when a hurricane knocks out the production at the Gulf Coast, because there won't be as much supplementary product coming from the Gulf Coast into petroleum allocation district too. But this year, we might be a little bit more vulnerable, and it wouldn't surprise me if Great Lakes prices, you know, tend to be higher than the rest of the country because of the way you're set up for hurricane season 2024.
Yeah, so it's all kind of a balance and looking at, like you said, with one refinery that's currently down in the Midwest, you know, suddenly and a loss of or a coming loss of production in the Gulf Coast, suddenly that creates a new dynamic, I guess, as we're going forward. Really, you know, as we look at the fall months, once we get through August, you know, we might still see these hurricanes coming, but the impacts, the demand is already going to be lower. The impacts from supply, any supply loss are not going to be felt the same way. You know, that actually brings to mind a question I want to ask you, because I know you have an idea about how generally, right? Like how do people separate the hype from the actual likely consequences of a storm? Like we're saying, you know, you hear a hurricane's coming, but maybe we're already into September. So how do you separate that out?
Well, you know, the oil business, and particularly prices for oil, are really, you know, a case of every overreaction prompts a similar overreaction, whether to the up or the downside. The one thing I've noticed, though, in, you know, 45 years of watching storms is that there's a readiness to sort of buy in a speculative aspect to it. If something happens between, let's say, August 1st and September 15th, after that, not so much, particularly for gasoline. You know, the one storm that I remember is, you know, everybody talks about Katrina, but hardly anyone talked talks about Rita. And Rita came a few weeks after Katrina and didn't have that much of an impact on gasoline prices, but really sent diesel prices considerably higher in the fall of 2005. So I think that's one of the things you have to recognize is that the hype will be focused on gasoline, which is kind of, you know, like the public's Elvis, so to speak. They get quite upset with high gasoline prices. And then it's you have to worry about actual downtime that is more than just a few days. And that happened after Katrina and Rita. That happened to a certain extent after Ida. It didn't happen after Hurricane Harvey in 2017, even though Harvey probably knocked out more refining capacity for a brief period of time than anywhere. One final thing I would suggest is that refineries are much more complex than they used to be. And the place where the complexity really manifests itself is along the Gulf Coast. We'll probably add some refining capacity in the next few years at the Gulf Coast to very complex, very sophisticated properties. And that means that they're a little bit more difficult to restart after you get a power outage or an intrusion of water or whatever. So those are the things we need to concentrate on. The odds are with us. You know, the probability is that it's only one every 5 or 6 years that we get a hurricane that actually impacts refining supply. But this year, based on all the expertise, it's going to be a little bit higher probability than normal.
Well, that's really good to know. So we'll keep an eye on that. As we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts, anything you'd like to share with us about hurricanes and energy pricing?
I mean, the final thought I would share these days is that I think there's a bias toward prices moving lower in the last third of 2024. You know, in the month of August, internationally, we use about 104 million barrels a day of petroleum, and that drops appreciably in September, October, and November. There's been a template in recent years where the market tends to bottom for gasoline and crude oil right around the middle of December. And I think we're going to pursue that template this year. It may be altered a little bit by the election, but very little that happens in the election will probably impact prices in 2024. The greater impacts come through the presidency that goes from 2025 to 2028. So without a storm, I think we're looking at appreciably lower prices for gasoline and appreciably lower prices for crude oil in the last third of 2024.
Sounds like exciting times, and that's good advice. We'll aim to keep our heads about us as we go forward with this. Well, thank you so much, Tom. Thanks for taking us through this today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.